We're back in Parshat Bishalach. We're going to conclude our discussion of Bishalach as a group together today. So far we've talked about, or last time specifically we talked about, the actual arc of Parshat Bishalach. And what did we put on the board basically? What was the diagram? Correct. Thank you, Margalit. This, and then this. An absolute drop. Where at the first half of Parshat Bishalach, we have this incredible, amazing build-up. We have the conclusion of Yitziat Mitzrayim. We have Kriyat Yamsuf culminating in the glory that is Az Yashir, as we spoke about last time and 2 times ago. Culminating in the glory of Az Yashir and a clarity of Emunah, a clarity of an understanding of where we're headed and what our direction is. Mikdash Hashem Karanu Yadecha, Hashem Yimloch Li'olam Va'ed, where they were going to build Beit HaMikdash, we're going to Hashem Yimloch Li'olam Va'ed, we're going to a reality, a revelation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is completely present in the world. That's the aim, that's the goal, that's the destination. That's how we're born as Am Yisrael, Yashar, Kel, the straight ones of God with direction. That's how we're born as a people who are aimed at a goal. We're born as a people who are born into a reality of Chodesh and Chidush, and not just the sun which is going around and around, but something which has a vector and a goal. And we're born as Klal Yisrael. And we expect either that the Parsha should end here with Shirat Hayam, or that what we should see is coming to this amazing peak, coming all the way up to this amazing peak, and then plateauing and going across history. But instead we see the opposite, and we just drop. 4 stories that we identified. Story of Mara. 3 days later. 3 days. The story of Mara, where we complain about the bitter waters, followed by the story of the man, where we complain, God responds, He gives us man, and we say, and he says, just whatever you do, don't take more than you're allotted. We go out and take more anyway. Then he says, don't worry, I'm going to give you for Shabbos. You have to go down on Shabbos. You go down on Shabbos anyway. We don't have the pasuk there, but how, you know, this is one example of many pasukim in these paragraphs, where God gets, quote unquote, so frustrated to the point where he turns around after we go out on the seventh day and look for a man anyway. Perek Tzayin, pasuk Chafket. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, anam antam lishmor mitzvay v'torotai. Until how long are these people going to refuse to compete to keep my commandments? What's wrong with these people? And then we go forward to Masal Meriva, where we complain about the water again. And where the place is defined as Vayikrash Perak Yudzayin Pasuk Zayin Vayikrashim Makom Masal Meriva. The place became called Masal Meriva, the place of strife, the waters of strife. Al Riv Bnei Yisrael Ve'al Nasotam Et Hashem. The argument that they had with the Kadosh Baruch Hu and with their testing of God. Lemor Hayesh Hashem Bikirbeinu Imayin. Is God really within us or not? Is God amongst us or not? One of the most painful questions that we'll come back to during this shiur. The most painful questions asked throughout all of Jewish history. Hayesh Hashem Bikirbi in your mind. Is God really even here? Bringing about our first battle with what will be over history, our arch nemesis, Amalek. And we round out the Parsha with our first battle with Amalek. Polar opposites in terms of the two halves of this one whole of Parshat Bishalach. So the question that we wanted to address was, and where we left off last time, is we said we have this amazing and wonderful revelation at Shirat Hayam, this nevuah that was unparalleled, Shirat Hayam, this clarity at Shirat Hayam. Where does that clarity go? What happens? Where does that clarity go? So we'll take it as we often do in stages. Stage number one, which is incredibly lemaaseh for all of us in all of our lives, is this is a pattern that is not unique to Parshat Bishalach. If you were to use a modern word that we use all the time in NCSY, in Kiruv, in camps, and all this stuff, there's this build-up and build-up. This is a moment of what, Shirat Hayam? What would you call this? A moment of what? Spiritual high, inspiration. These are all great buzzwords that we would use in all of those instances, right? But like, we're used to that terminology. We're used to striving for, trying to create moments of spiritual upliftment, spirit moments of inspiration. And as Jewish educators, we learn, we study, we try to create, we try to help create a forum to manifest these incredible moments of spiritual inspiration. Here's what we don't do as Jewish educators enough, and here's what we often are not as prepared for in life. is that spiritual high, even better, which implies that spike up right before the fall. But a spiritual high or moments of inspiration are very much moments. They're incredibly powerful. They're incredibly powerful. However, they don't last forever. And the difficulty of moments of inspiration is not the moment of inspiration itself, it's the morning after. It's the day after when the inspiration falls away. It's the day after when the inspiration is no longer there, where it becomes a fleeting memory. And the question is, what happens next? How do I bring that into my life? That total disparity, to the point where we can just make this huge jump and then a spike and then it comes right back down in terms of the very frame of the parsha itself. You know, that's so much of what that time of the year is about. We haven't talked about this layer of it, and I'm going to try to weave it in because I think it's important to emphasize. We often lose sight of this layer of the time of the year. But Parshat B'Shalach, what time of the year in terms of the cycle of the Jewish year every year, what time of the year is Parshat B'Shalach? Literally think about what's happening here and think about the cycle of the year. Where are we in the cycle of the year?
Pesach.
Not in Pesach. You see, I'm sorry, it was Parshat Bo. What's Parshat Yitro? What happens in Parshat Yitro, the next Parsha? Har Sinai. So what happens in between?
Sfirat
HaOmer. If you want to look for the biblical, for the Torah roots of Sfirat HaOmer, Parshat B'Shalach is Sfirat HaOmer. Whole different floor of exploration that we're not going to get to go into enough, but a lot of food for thought. The 49 days, pachot yoter, meaning you lose a little bit at the beginning, you lose a little bit at the end, but basically, the 49 days of Sfirat HaOmer are the 49 days of Parshat B'Shalach, where we do the same thing in a microcosm every single year and in our lives. We go through Seder night. Seder night, which is this explosive, supposed to be, hopefully, in all of our lives and our families, whether in our families now and the families that we build, Bezrat Hashem, Shatzim Masachat, whatever it may be, where we try to build this energy in the room, this reality, where we stay up all night. And we talked about the contrast, and not Stam, that we're bringing it back in, of daytime being a time of chesed, clarity, as contrasted with nighttime, where we need emuna. The Sfarim bring down that Pesach is a day that's kulo chesed. Pesach night is a night that's kulo chesed. Pesach night is a night that's not a night. Pesach night is a night, say the Sfarim HaKadoshim, Pesach night is a night that's a day. That's why we say Hallel at night. There's no other time we say Hallel at night, because it's not a night. We stay up all night. We talk about the chesed of Hashem all night. Not about Emunah. It's kulo chesed. The gates are opened up. God has taken care of everything for us, as we read in the context of, meaning it's what all of Pesach is about, but we read in the context of right before Kriyat Yam Suf. We saw the Pesukim last time. Hashem Yilachem Lachem Vatem Tacharishun. You be silent. I'm taking care of everything right now. There's a clarity of a Kadosh Baruch Hu in the world. Pesach night, all of the gates open up. Also point out the Sfarim that there are many layers to the word Pesach, and we'll hopefully keep on unpacking more of them, I think still over time, in the context of the Sefer. But Pesach, what does Pesach literally mean to do? To pass over. So we understand it in the literal sense of passing over the
doors.
Houses. Well, the doors of the houses, but passing over the Jewish homes, right? The Sfarim point out that there's other layers to what Pesach means. That on Pesach, and think about the relationship here to how we started off the conversation. Pesach means to jump over. That on Pesach you can jump over layers of clarity and Avodas Hashem. You don't need to climb the ladder. You can jump right up to the top. That's the potential within Pesach night. But the Sfarim also warn of the opposite, which is that the second that Pesach is over, the second Pesach night is over, seventh day of Pesach is over, however you want to look at it, the second the holiday of Pesach ends, and those gates are closed, and that clarity is no longer there, be careful, because as high as you jump, make sure that you have the strength to cling for dear life to what you've achieved. Because if you reach too far and too high, you're going to fall. Because when that inspiration doesn't last, it's not going to be so simple. And we transition to a very different part of the year, which is the rest of Parshat Bishalach. We transition to Sfirat HaOmer. What do we do in Sfirat HaOmer? What's the actual mitzvah that we do in Sfirat HaOmer? We count the day. We don't jump. Progression. With hard work, we move step by step by step by step, one at a time, and count them out, to work over the course of Sfirat HaOmer to achieve step by step that which we saw over Pesach, that which we tasted over Pesach, that inspiration that we got. We have to internalize that now. Now we need to work to earn it on our own. Because if we don't, it's not going to become a part of us. That's the flip side of inspiration. Inspiration has to be followed up with internalization, conceptualization, bringing it inside of us and working to make it real and a part of ourselves. Because if we don't, we fall. And so it's not surprising that a people that get to see Shirat HaYam, get to experience Kriyat Yam Suf and sing Shirat HaYam and see the Nevuah at Shirat HaYam. See that Nevuah where we're told that the Shifcha by the Yam saw more than Yechezkel ben Uzziah. I believe it's Rav Chaim Shmulevitz and Sichot Musar actually picks up on this, the nuance of the Lashon. Who is it? Who on the water saw it? Yechezkel was the greatest Navi that there ever was. So who by the water sees what Yechezkel saw? More than Yechezkel saw. What's the Lashon there? What's a Shifcha? A maidservant. Now, what did that maidservant just accomplish at Shirat HaYam? What was the experience that we just described? What is it? Seeing what? So what do we call? What do we call true vision in Judaism? Seeing something? Nevuah. So you know what it should have said? Hanivyot bayam. Saw even more than Yechezkel and Buzi. What's the Shifcha bayam? Why call her a Shifcha? If she's a Neviyah. I believe it's Rechayim Shmulevitz who points out. She was still a Shifcha. God gave as a gift that vision to people who were not necessarily worthy of receiving that vision. They saw more than they were capable of internalizing. They saw more than they were capable of taking in. These were not people who had worked to become Nevi'ot. And on the flip side, Nevi'im, there's no differentiation there. Whether it's a man or a woman, that's irrelevant in this conversation. They saw that which was beyond them. And so they wake up the next morning, and maybe they were certainly on a higher spiritual level than us to begin with. So fine, it takes them 3 days. But yeah, 3 days later, that was awesome, but the water's bitter. That was great, but where's the food? I thought we were promised food on this journey. That's great, but how do I know that God is going to give me double the portion the next day? There's going to be food tomorrow. There's going to be food the day after that. That I have to go out on Shabbos and look. How do I know that God's really going to keep giving me water? I don't have to test God and make sure that He's there. How do I know that God's here? And without raising any hands, tell us one person in this room. I would challenge, again, not publicly, one person in this room to tell me that they haven't had a moment of inspiration that's been so high and not felt the crash 1, 2, 3 days later, a week later. That's the challenge presented by Parshat Bishalach. That's the challenge presented by Jewish history. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a visit at Shirat HaYam all the way until the end. All the way. Till Mikdash Hashem Konu Yadecha, till Beit HaMikdash, and Hashem Yilchi Yilam Ba'ed. He gives us our vector, He gives us our definition, He gives us our direction. Then it takes the entirety of Jewish history to live up to that. It takes the entirety of Jewish history to get past, even in the paradigms that we put forth, you know, even to really bring it down in clunky, very human, very practical terms. When we were describing the arc of relationships as it relates to the Exodus and Kriyat Yam Suf and Matan Torah, what did we say was Kriyat Yam Suf? The engagement, right? That's like, for those of you who experienced it, hopefully again, all of you Shatav Om Sachad, if you haven't yet, but like, it's this amazing moment. And you know, this person is it. And there's nothing to talk about. That's why you got this far. And you look at people, and it's part of the process. You look at people a month in, 2 months into an engagement, especially if they wait for a long engagement, and it's 6 months or a year. They look a little frazzled. And there are times where they're not so sure. And there are parents who, understandably, as my very own parents did, they looked at me and said, "You're only engaged." And they didn't mean this in a negative way. They were there to support me. Just to me, "You're only engaged. There's no shame in backing out now before you're married, and better before you're married than after you're married." And that was no reflection on Shoshana, who's the most wonderful person on the face of the planet, and you should all be zochet to have a husband as she is a wife to me. But, you know, my parents looked at me and said, "Just so you know, do you have any doubts? Do you have any doubts?" And there are times where you're not so sure, and the fighting gets complicated, and the families get complicated, and everything gets complicated, and the journey is much more difficult. The journey is always harder than the inspiration. Now, when we get to the culmination of this parsha, who is the battle that we have at the end of this week's at the end of Parshat Bishalach, the parsha that we're dealing with? Amalek. So let's talk about Amalek a little bit, and how much that embodies everything that we're talking about, and that's why that's the point at which the parsha culminates at. So a few things about Amalek. It's relatively well known. Even on, let's just take it out, we'll move back into Psukim and sources in a moment. But there's a classic gematria that's given about Amalek. That Amalek in gematria is equal to? Safek. They have the same numerical value. Amalek is that doubt. Where do the Sfarim pick up on that from? From the Psukim themselves. We ask that question. We ask the question at the end of Parshat Bishalach, at Masa Meriva. Again, what I would claim is possibly the most painful question in Jewish history and the most central question in Jewish history. Hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu im ayin. Is God within us or not? A question that we had no doubt about when we had Emunah at Kriyat Yamsuf, but that Emunah disappears. And Emunah, that faithfulness, that clarity, gets replaced with that safek. And the second that we say Ayesh HaMikabinu Imayim, the Mepharshim pick up on what's the very next words at the end of the Parsha. Look inside your Chumashim. What are literally the very next words? Vayavo Amalek. Because this question produces Amalek. Or, if you're asking that question, you're already living in a war with Amalek. You're already there. Now later on, when we talk about the mitzvah to remember Amalek, we reference it as such. Where do we talk about it? Does anybody even what it's called? The parsha that we talk about remembering Amalek. Parshat Zachor. We read it before Purim. Think about, hear the way that it's referred to there. If you have Chumashim, you can open up to in Devarim. Perek Chafei Pasuk Yud Zayin. This is where we're commanded to remember and we're told how central Amalek is to the Jewish people in our history. Zachor et asher asah lecha Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to you. Baderech, betzeitcha mimitzrayim. Asher karcha baderech. V'yizaneh becha kol anashalim acharecha. There are two words there that as a group I think we should focus on in this context. And they appear next to each other, but one of them gets repeated twice. Asher karcha baderech. Let's talk about the second word first. Asher karcha baderech. Now that word could be significant on its own, right? Because it appears in the text of the Chumash. Why am I harping on the word derech here?
Journey.
In the text that we just read. Then we'll jump to your point, Eliora. It's repeated. This paragraph emphasizes the word derech. Zachor et asher asah lecha Amalek baderech b'tzeitcha mimitzrayim. Asher karcha baderech. This gets repeated twice. So what is a derech? That is a journey. And says Eliora, that's what we've been talking about. That journey of Jewish history. Remember we talked about even just the steps of Sfirat HaOmer, one step at a time, walking down Sfirat HaOmer. The journey from Kriyat Yamsuf to Matan Torah. The journey of history itself, from where we are at the moment we're born as a people to Mikdash Hashem Kodem Yadecha. It's all a derech. And we're warned that Amalek will attack you on the derech. And in fact, where are the times in Jewish history that Amalek attacks us? Watch this. Think about it for a second. At what points in Jewish history are we actually attacked by Amalek? What's the first one?
Yeah.
Right here, which is? In Bishalach. So we're going to fine-tune that in a moment. But for now, let's call it Bishalach. Where's the next time that we confront Amalek, that we fight Amalek? In Tanakh. All of those were correct, because they're all characters in the same story, yes. Shaul, Shmuel, right? In Shmuel, King Shaul goes to fight Amalek. So the second time is, in Sefer, Shmuel. When is the next time that we fight Amalek, which actually directly stems from the story? The proof is from this story in Shmuel. Excellent, Purim. How do we know, in what way does Amalek appear in the Purim story?
Agagi.
What?
Agagi.
Who's Ha'agagi?
Well, the king that was kept alive in Shmuel.
In Purim, who's Ha'agagi?
Haman.
Yeah, I'm saying just spare it. Right, we fight Haman Ha'agagi. And so Margalit jumps ahead and says, why is he called Agagi? Because he's a descendant of?
The king.
King named Agag, which is the king of Amalek that Shmuel does not immediately kill when he fights Amalek. So at Purim we're fighting, and here we're fighting Agag. And here we're fighting Haman, who is his descendant, all coming from Amalek. There's one more stage at which Amalek actually does appear. This one appears in the Gemara, in what is possibly one of the most frightening Gemaras that I've ever been exposed to. And I want to read you the Gemara inside. Which requires one small preface. Who does Amalek himself come from?
Esav.
Right, Esav. Esav and Edom, which are all the same thing. The Gemara is in Masechet Megillah on the bottom of Daf Vav Amud Aleph and goes into Daf Vav Amud Bet. The Gemara in Masechet Megillah says as follows. The Amar Rabbi Yitzchak says, he quotes a pasuk in Tehillim, Al titzin Hashem ma'avei rasha zavamu al tafek yaromu sela. Don't allow the desires of the Rasha to come forth. So the Gemara explains, what does that pasuk in Tehillim actually mean? Amar Yaakov lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yaakov comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, Ribono shel olam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Al titein le'esav harasha ta'avat libo. Don't let Esav have his heart's desire, says Yaakov. Yaakov pleads before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't let Esav have his heart's desire. What is his heart's desire? Zamamo al tafek. So we explain it based on the pasuk. Says the Gemara, what is the other half of that pasuk of not letting him fill his heart's desire? Zo germamya shel Edom. Zo germamya shel Edom. Says the Gemara, she'il male hein yotzin, that if they go and burst forth uninhibited, machrivin kol ha'olam kulo, they will destroy the entire world. Says Rashi, germamya shem malchut, it's the name of a kingdom, v'hi me Edom, that comes from Edom. Says the Gra in the 1700s, the Gra lived from 1720 to 1790, says the Gra, Germania was the Gemara's phrase for Germany. Says the Gra in the 1700s. This is not retrofitting history. This is predicting history. And the Gemara goes on to explain, without getting into the details of the words here, but the Gemara goes on to explain that Germany is actually, that Germania Shel Edom is one of a lot of these different provinces, that if they were all combined together, then they would be able to burst forth. Which is actually exactly the structure of how Germany fits in and how that all came together in the stories, in the two wars that Germany burst forth and fought with the world. So number four is Germania Shel Edom. All I do is read, translate, and give you the Rashi and the Gra.
So innocent.
I'm saying, I'm not, kach katuf. Kach katuf. No, I don't want to raise him on the board. Okay. Other than the shock value of the fact that that appears in the Gemara and in the Gra, let's talk about in what way are these moments in Jewish history significant? Where are we going in the story of Shmuel when Shaul fights Agag? Where are we headed to? What are we trying to accomplish?
Building
Bayit Rishon. What are we between in the story of Purim that we're heading towards? Bayit Sheni. Where are we on our way to now at the end of history? Bayit Shlishi. Where are we in Parshat B'Shalach, the end of Sefer Shmuel? What are we heading toward?
Mishkan.
The Mishkan. Nobody brought up other instances. I let you guys got the story on that one. Mishkan, Bayit Rishon, Bayit Sheni, Bayit Shlishi. We have a vector to Jewish history where we're told the goal is Mishkan, Hashem, Konenu, Yadecha. And we immediately, as we start on the derech to accomplish that, that which keeps us from being able to accomplish that is Amalek, is that Safek. What is the content of Amalek beyond a gematria of Safek? Let's come back to the second word over here. Karcha baderech. Incredibly impactful word. Yes?
Sorry, what's Safek?
Safek is doubt.
Okay.
Safek is doubt. Rashi on that pasuk gives three complementary interpretations of what karcha baderech means. Anybody familiar with them? Or any of them?
I guess.
I mean, yes, it's inherent in the word. He didn't.
Happened. What do you say?
Not just happened. Mikre means, using your word, happenstance. Right? Mikre. Second. Coincidence, random, mikre. Two.
Well then.
Kor means cold. It's cold or to cool down. And Rashi actually brings a well-known mashal about that. That the whole world was seeing was experiencing the inspiration of Klal Yisrael. The whole world is experiencing it. Comes along Amalek and says, I can't come and overcome these waters, but here's what I can do. It's like a hot water bubbling. There's inspiration. Everything is fired up. So he jumps into the bath of hot water, and while he gets scalded, the water inevitably cools down. Meaning Amalek is willing to forfeit its life to prove that you can go against Klal Yisrael, to claim to prove that you can go against Klal Yisrael and the oneness of God. And number three, keri, which is a lashon of tumah, of impurity. Pouring content into what is the nature of that battle that they have with us over the course of history. They're coming to try and cool us down, to take away that inspiration, to not allow us to push forward. They're trying to immerse us in Tum'ah, to create divisions between ourselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to not reach our ultimate goal, to go in the opposite direction of where we're trying to head. They're trying to prove that there is no ultimate goal at all. It's all random. It's all happenstance. It's a question mark. Are you really sure there's a God? Are you really sure that there's meaning in life? Are you really sure that what you saw is what you saw? Are you really sure that that moment wasn't just an emotion and a feeling? It's not here anymore, is it? Is God? You really think you're so great? Is God really within you? I'm not convinced. Comes along an Amalek and tries to break the relationship of emunah that we have with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, to break that inspiration along the journey of life where things get increasingly more hidden and more hidden and more hidden and more hidden. As we move from a time of miracles in the desert to a time of much smaller miracles in Eretz Yisrael to a time of basically no miracles in Galus. And things get darker and darker and darker and more and more and more based on emunah. And he fights harder and harder and harder to prove. It's random, it's happenstance, chill out, and there's nothing to fight for. Embrace the tuma. To the point where we're feeling toward the very end of that journey, the very end of that fight, where we exist in a reality where I think it's fair to say that some of the biggest battles that we fight bizman hazeh in our avodas Hashem nationally are apathy, mediocrity. We don't strive, we don't work, it's okay to take it easy. We're apathetic. Why should we try? Where are we really going? Tum'ah is certainly ever present and incredibly tempting, perhaps more so than ever. In a reality of postmodernism, where there is no ultimate meaning, whatever I see and I think is what counts. There's a higher meaning, there's ultimate truth, there's no ultimate truth, there's only subjective perspective. Who says there's an ultimate goal? That's the Amalek of our generation, inside and outside, fighting us, desperately trying to beat us down in a suicide mission, just like he did in Parshat B'Shalach. As we come down to the last stage at the end point of Jewish history. And that's why we're told two things about the inevitable wars with Amalek. In our Parashat, the very closing Pasuk, and with this we'll close out as well. After we defeat Amalek for the first time, by the way, how do we defeat Amalek in this story? Which we actually talked about two shiurim ago. Moshe's holding up his hands. Vayayadav, or what? What Lashon is used there again? Now it comes back full circle. Vayayadav, take a look inside. Parshat B'Shalach, last few Pesukim. Emunah. Ad. Bo Hashemesh. The emunah holds until there's clarity. And then we come to the end of that battle and the closing psukim of the parsha, where we're told, Vayomer, God says, Kiyad al keska, but it's a complicated pasuk, but that the hand of Amalek is trying to cover up the kisei of Hashem. Milchama la Hashem ba'amalek, midor dor. This is going to be the struggle of all of history, is the battle with Amalek, as we already outlined on the board. It's the struggle of all of history. Milchama la Hashem ba'amalek midor dor. But we are promised one thing, and at least on a somewhat of an upbeat note. We're promised one thing, and it comes from none other than Bil'am HaRasha. In Parshat Balak, in the last prophecy of Bil'am, Bil'am tells us, or rather Bil'am goes and tells Balak, let me tell you what's going to be, and this is one of the few times in Chumash where such a term is used, Ba'acharit HaYamim, at the end of days, whatever that means, which is an intentionally mysterious term throughout Chumash. There's no discussion of Tzkiyat HaMitim, if you want to Mashiach. These things generally tend to not be discussed explicitly for whatever reason, which is not our topic right now. But he used the, this is what's going to happen, Ba'acharit HaYamim. And says Balak, what will happen at the end of days to Amalek, which it doesn't say about any other nation, Perekhav in Bamidbar, Perekhav Dal Pasukhav, Vayarat Amalek, Vayisam Shalo Vayomar. He sees Amalek and he says his mashal, he opens up and says his mashal and says, Vayomar, Reshit Goyim Amalek. Amalek is the first of nations. Is Amalek the first nation to be produced? In what way is Amalek the first of the Goyim? The first to attack us, the first to challenge us. Reshit goyim amalek. But here's what I'm telling you, says Bil'am in his nevuah. V'acharito ade ovid. In the end, he will totally and completely disappear. Because in an ultimate reality where there is an end goal of Mikdash Hashem kor liyadecha, where at the end of days we're promised at Shirat Hayam that we're going to have a revelation of Hashem Yimloch li'olam va'ed. Well, there will be a revelation of God's glory and clarity for all forever and ever. What's the opposite of clarity? What? Safek or doubt. And if the identity of Amalek is safek, Amalek is a nation which we're guaranteed will not exist in Acharit HaYamin. Because their very essence is nullified. Because in an end goal, in an end game of certainty and clarity, Amalek has no kiyum. Rishit goyim Amalek va'acharito adeoved. And our goal, each one of us personally, not just nationally, in the goal of our lives, is to keep in mind and internalize that message of Parshat B'Shalach, to embrace, enjoy, live in those moments of inspiration. But in those moments, tuck away as much of it as we can and hold it as close as we can, that we walk away with something, that we build it into our memories as not just something that happened, but as a goal that God is giving us, benevuah, to strive for. And then work every day to build toward a real clarity that comes from the inside, not from the outside. That comes from the inside of a knowledge of that. To walk through the darkness of life and that inspiration goes away step by step and earn it, overcome those sfeikot, and eventually, Bezrat Hashem, in our own lives, build Avi Mishkan Evna, to build the Mishkan in ourselves, and to see a reality in our own lives of God living with us every moment of every day. A reality of Hashem Yimloch Li'olam Va'ed, that the Malchus of Hashem is in my life every single moment, every single day, forever and ever. Bezrat Hashem by each one of us. With that, we're going to close up Parshat B'Shalach, and we'll transition to Parshat Yitro next year.